Hi, I'm Jacques Niem from Not So Super Publishing. You can find me on notsosuper.pub, and you're watching and listening to Two Geeks Talking.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. Two Geeks Talking is an entertainment industry interview show where we interview the creative people from the comic, film, TV, movie, and video game industries. And of course, I'm your host, Kurt Sasso. We are joined today by a returning guest. It has been at least 12 years since he was last on the show, to the point that I think his only interview on the show is actually in podcast format, which is no longer even online, but it will be coming back soon. He is now a self-publisher. He's still a comic creator. He's still a very talented individual. And we are joined by the owner of Not So Super Publishing, Jacques Niembe. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you back. It has been far too long, to the point that we don't even remember talking to each other.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, over a decade.
Time flies. You're looking well. You have a great new venture here. We're obviously going to dive into it. I'm jumping ahead of myself as I do. For those that don't know anything about yourself as a creative person, tell us who you are and what you're bringing to Two Geeks Talking.
My name is Jacques Niem. I am the publisher, the writer, owner, founder of Not So Super Publishing. I've been creating books for over a decade now, and I've created books from comics, picture books, magazines, zines, so many different kinds of books, and comics, especially comics. I've been making those over a decade with and collaborating with a bunch of different artists. And it's been a great experience.
It's amazing. You know, a decade is a long time from a creative perspective and from a life perspective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the fact that you're now doing self-publishing and that world that you're diving into. You know, what strategies have you employed to effectively engage your audience and expand your reach?
Thankfully, it's been a learning process for me. I've been self-publishing since over a decade. I've learned a lot of lessons over the years from experience. I'm a graphic designer by trade, and I've always worked in the marketing section of all my careers over the past 20 years. But I've been using the experience that I had as a graphic designer and creating things for marketers to learn how to speak to people online, either on social media or via just conventions and making my table look different from other creatives. I've always enjoyed trying to find ways to be different from anybody around me. From starting Kickstarters before everyone else decided to jump into it, to now deciding to do something completely different, like creating a community-led and community-based way of funding projects, which does not rely on crowdfunding. So over the years, I've just been finding different ways to differentiate myself from other creators out there.
Do you have any like specific tips or top three things that you've learned regarding this world of self-publishing? Because I think it's interesting for those that maybe they can introduce that into what they are creating currently, either with a comic or a marketing strategy.
The first thing, as a writer, I've always said you have to love what you create before you go out there and put it out there, because not liking what you create immediately shows in the table when you're up there. It just, it's visible that you're not passionate about the project you're working on. I say passion is very important because it displays itself in either your social posts or in your interaction with customers, and your love of creating has to transfer over in anything and everything that you do. Number two, the second thing is, if you have skills, specific skills, it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever skill you have that is different from everyone else, capitalize on it. As I said earlier, I am a graphic designer. So I've always thought in my head, my book cannot look like anybody else because I can design. So why do I have to design my stuff to look like everybody else? So I use my graphic design background to make books different sizes, different paper types. Like, I just find ways to differentiate myself from others using the skill that I have. Others are great talkers. If you're a great talker, find ways to make that be part of your marketing strategy or however you do your projects. So I think that's very important, is lean into what you're good at. Third thing I would say is your interaction and your collaborations are important, and you always have to remember that how you treat others will always come back some way, somehow. So if you're interacting, for example, I've worked with my 50th artist this year, 50th. I have had great experiences with all of them, and a lot of them want to return and want to keep working with me, and we want to do new projects. But that's only because my interaction with them is always understanding, always trying to work together to ensure that is a mutually beneficial situation for all of us. And that is very important. Like your interaction with the people you work with will either sink you or propel you to greater height.
That's great advice. It's a lot of, especially the creative aspect, the creative field is everyone's introverted in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. So to promote yourself seems like it's Mount Everest when it comes to the promotion of your creativity yeah. and yourself. It's even worse for Canadians just because we're sorry all the time. But from an introverted status, I should say, mm-hmm. you got to break out of that shell. You got to be able to promote and talk and sell yourself and sell what you're creating. And I think social media is kind of that bridge and that gap between mm-hmm. being able to do that because you're behind a computer. Like at least you don't have to be face to face and sweat bullets.
And what's funny about what you're saying is I am severely introverted. Like I'm introverted. This has actually pulled me out of my shell because when I talk about something I'm passionate about, it comes clear, you know, but if I'm sitting here and we're like having small talk about the weather, I will die inside, you know, slowly. No one will want to interact with me. So it's the passion of what I'm doing is really what's propelling me because internally the motivation to be out there in front of people is not like my number one thing I ever want to do with time. You know, you get to that point by just practicing.
If it wasn't for this show, I always say that I'm introverted extrovert. So I've had to force myself to become an extroverted person just to interview mm-hmm. people or else this show wouldn't have lasted 15 years.
Yes, that is true.
you know, you have a lot of diverse roles when it comes to not only your responsibilities, but as a publisher, but also to your family. You're a family man. You are a creative person. You're a graphic designer. You have many different hats, so to speak, when it comes to your responsibilities. But how do you prioritize the tasks and mm-hmm. maintain focus, not only on your creative projects, but also while managing your family commitments?
Earlier, and this is advice for other people who will want to do the same thing I'm doing. Earlier in this, I burned the candle on both ends. I just went to work, try to take care of the kids at night and do the comics things and just try to smash it all together at the same time. But sometime around when my second child was born, who is now 8 years old, so 8 years ago, I had a car accident because I was doing everything at once and it was not feasible or possible for me to try to do all these things at once. So it taught me a lesson very early that you have to move at the pace that works with your life, wherever your life is. I have children, so I prioritize my family, but I also create time and pockets of time for myself to create. And I'm also comfortable with moving slowly. Like I said, I've been doing this for a decade and I've made 9 books. Stayed for 11, 12 years and I've made 9 books. I made the first 5 books on the first year and I did everything. It was too much. It was too much for one human to try, but the pacing myself now has enabled me to be more aware of what needs to be done. The stories are tighter. My patience with artists, I can work with artists for however long they need, you know, and we can just kind of work together to get things done. I'm the only one people who know when things are going to come out is me and the artist. Everybody else is like, they're just surprised. Oh, I saw this art. It's great. And they go buy the book. But, you know, I'm not creating deadlines that destroy all of us. But it shows in the book. It shows in the response once the books are ready. I've just learned to be very patient. I know we live in a world where everything needs to be done quickly, but the art suffers, the creativity suffers. And you're not able to do this a decade if you constantly are burning the candle on both ends.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I've been there in many different avenues from when I was doing a double major in visual arts and film. Uh-huh. That was, oh, so much fun learning how to draw color wheels my very first day of university from an IT background at that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, going from logical to creative was just blew my mind. You talk about collaboration. You talk about the fact that you're working with an amazing stable of people.
But I had some anthologies where they had several artists in it, and I wrote several books where I worked with each individual on stories I wrote, but it was all in. So I work with 50 artists. 50 books someday, but not there yet.
That's really burning the candle at both ends. So let's talk about the collaboration, because that's essential for creative growth. And I think that if you can share specific instances where you've collaborated that has significantly influenced your artistic approach and maybe someone you've worked with as well.
At the beginning of this comics journey, I had the opportunity to work with several people who at the time they were just starting, but now they are in far greater heights. One of them is Kayla Miller, who was doing their own comic several years ago. I think the name of it was Creep. And I saw the comic and their art style was amazing to me. The look was unique. I've never seen it anywhere. And I approached them and asked if we could work on a comic, crazy comic called Smorgasbord Squad. I needed that unique look to work on it. And they were very nice and actually joined in and worked with me. And we created these characters and this different way of doing a story. And it was a very good collaboration. And I learned a lot. It was my beginning years of comic working and the interaction and the work that came out of it. We even tried to start doing like an animation thing, which didn't come because I crashed my car that same year because I was trying to do animation. That year was not a good year. But since then, they have just meteorically risen and now are doing their own thing right now, working on, it's called Click. It's a New York Times bestseller comic now. I work with them and I've worked with every artist that I've worked with. I've gained a perspective on how to work with people who have different styles and different ways of communicating. Everyone has different communicating styles. And whenever I send an email, I'm always like, how do you work? Because I already did the, well, I already written the thing. But if there's a way you prefer a script with more detail, less detail, do you prefer to work with someone who is descriptive or do you want room to grow? You have to ask these questions because everyone's different. And I've had so many different experiences. Some people like it to be very clear and want everything like clearly stated in the script. And others just want a loose outline to give them rooms to play. Interacting with different people and learning the different styles and ways they work has really changed like my process and how I interact and even approach artists when I do projects.
How do you approach artists then? Because you must be using social media. Is there a certain criteria? Finding the artists you're looking for, does that include like, are you looking for inclusive storytelling? Are you looking for a certain, not necessarily creative style, but are you looking for like a certain character type, a genre you haven't worked on?
Usually I know the artist before I write the story. That's the weird thing. Usually I have a look or an idea of where I want to go, or sometimes I've just seen an artist and I like that style. And I'm like, I think I could write a story that fits this look. One of the reasons why I've had a lot of success rates with working with artists is because I look at what they're good at. Like if I look at something and I love how they do that thing, I approach them with a project that allows them to do that thing they like to do. And that makes for an easier collaboration than me trying to force someone to fit into a peg of something they have no interest in. My approach has always been, I go online, usually it's people I follow, people whose books I purchased, because I always go to conventions and I see a person that I've never seen before. I get their book, I look at it, and maybe a few years later, something pops up and I'm like, hey, do you want to work? You know, would you like to work with me? Here is the project. Here's the script. Are you interested? And a lot of the times I get, yes, let's work. You know, other times artists are very busy and it's like, nah, this is not this time, maybe next time. And then I go come back again and then they're ready to work with me. So, you know, it's all in the tailoring what you create. I have this thing called aphantasia, which means that I can't picture things inside of my head, which may, like, other people can pause and they can think and picture things in their head. I can't see anything. So it makes me not precious. So artists like working with me because I'm not precious. I'm like, I kind of have an idea, and here is like Google pictures of kind of what I'm thinking, yeah. But you be free to do what you're good at. And they usually do something better than what I try to cobble together. And so I'm never mad, because it never, like, there's nothing in my head that is supposed to fit. Instead, there's a feeling I'm getting when I look at it. It's like, that's how I wanted it to feel. It feels like that. So we're good. A lot of little things have made my interaction with artists just a little smoother, you know, over the years.
It almost sounds like you should be doing like film direct or writing scripts for film or something like that. It sounds like you have the perfect personality for that.
Actually, I like the idea of it, because I love film. I love how people come up with things and how people think and the process behind making the thing be the way the thing is. So I love it. But one thing at a time, I'm not burning any. I'll be good in comics, and I enjoy movies.
Fair enough. The storytelling that you've written for these amazing, talented artists that you've worked with and collaborated with, have you encountered any criticism or feedback regarding what you've created? How have you dealt with that type of criticism?
The weird thing about me is I don't know what it is about me, because I actually have a very thick skin. I don't know if people know that about me, but it takes a lot to get me riled up. It takes only a very few people can get me there. And it's people who know me very, very well and know the button, you know, unless you're within that very few group, I can kind of take myself out of things and not take things personally. But I think that personality and the way I do means people don't come with criticism to me, because they think, I don't know what it is, but it's like, yeah, did you hate it? But nobody tells me if they hate things or not. And that puts me in this constant state of, was it good? Because I'm not hearing dislike, because that's what I kind of need that to know where to go. So I'm in this weird space where I don't hear criticism, and people buy books. So I'm like, I guess it's good, but I know there's critics out there. I guess I'm not big enough for them to like complain publicly yet. So I'm enjoying my relative smallness in publishing. But I guess if I ever get bigger and Disney buys something from me, maybe I'll start getting some criticism.
Oh no, Disney bought a comic I created. What a shame. I guess I will buy that house I always wanted.
Exactly. Why I'm crying.
I'm crying in my big pile of money. Oh no. That's the ultimate dream. Have a bigger property, buy up what you created, and get the royalties from it whenever they create something. That's what works best. When you schedule the interview, the Super Sustainer program, you know, that just seems like a really innovative approach to sustaining creativity. Like you said, it's not a crowdfunding campaign, but how did you come about this idea and this concept? And
this came about because when I first started this, I started with my very first project was on Kickstarter 12 years ago. I went online and I did the crowdfunding thing, and I've done it for several different projects. I've used crowdfunding. But the past few years, I started noticing fatigue towards it. I'm noticing people getting inundated by it. And I've reached a point now where people who like what I create just are kind of waiting for me to make it so that they can just buy it, which is a good space to be in. And I'm very thankful to be in this space. And the problem with being in this space is that crowdfunding through Kickstarters end up being exhausting, because you're doing all this work and you now owe people a whole bunch of product. So you're spending a lot of effort doing all of this. And by the end of it, you ship all this stuff and you have no inventory left, and you have to start all over again. And you have to try to go to conventions. And that loop is exhausting. It's very hard to do. Others have been trying Patreon, and I was thinking about Patreon in that direction, but it closed people in. There's this kind of closed space, and you can't come in at your leisure. You feel kind of required to, and I don't want people to feel that way. So I thought the easier way would be, and I just recently launched it, was to created a way where people can give however they give best, either through paying online by doing a donation online, or send a check, or there's ways you could text to fund, like just finding of different ways where people can just donate however they want, whenever they want. They can schedule it when they want to. And what I do is I offer up information about how I'm doing the project, offer transparency in terms of what projects I'm working on, where this money that came in, where is it going to go? Just giving transparency to people, because that's really what people want at the end of the day. They want to know that what they're giving is really helping you move forward. And I found that working that way is easier, it's realistic, it makes even your customer base understand the process, that it doesn't just happen overnight. You understand that, you know, it takes time to work with an artist, to create something. And the other thing I've learned over the years is that people like to be part of the process in the beginning. If they see the screenshots of the art from the beginning, by the time I get to the end, it's not a lot of work to get people to want to buy the book. I enjoy being in that part where I can bring everyone along at the beginning and they can see how it works. And at the end is an easier sell than trying to say this randomly out of the blue, this new book is out after 20 other people have Kickstarters at the exact same time as I do. So it's impossible to compete that way. So I always try to find a way I can differentiate myself from others. And I think that this is a model that no one is really doing. I want to try it out and just see where it goes. And I guarantee you, like a lot of the ideas I've had over the years, you're going to see a lot of people start doing this later on, but I'll be the one to start and see where it goes.
Being a trendsetter isn't a bad thing. Just saying.
Right? No, it isn't. But the problem is when you start, people perfected along the line, and then you are like, I started it, but I can't reap the reward for it, which is fine. I don't have a problem with it. It's not an issue. But I've learned over the years that when you start first, unless you are, again, famous, it takes a while for people to understand where you're going or what you're doing, your vision. You're weird. And then afterwards, it's like, I see where you went. Oh, but 15 other people are doing it now. So, yeah.
But these types of people that rule the world. So, you know, hiding in the shadows, but in plain sight. Go figure.
Yeah, it's true.
Mild-mannered, publisher by night, but truly rules the world. That's Jacques for you. What is it about being creative and being a family man that just keeps you engaged and wanting to do better, not only for yourself, but for those around you?
Honestly, I started being creative and going this path before, like, my firstborn. She's going to turn 13 this year. Before she was born, I was in an interesting space where it was during the recession and here in the US, and we all were kind of in a weird spot. I previously quit my job to start a freelancing as a graphic designer on my own. And we were told by doctors and everything that we could not have children. So we were just kind of like, oh, okay, well, I quit my job. I'm going to do what I want and whatever, I go freelance. Then the recession came and all of my freelance work dried up. I had no work after that. So I was in this weird spot where I needed work. I needed a job. I applied to 70 something plus jobs. No one replied to me. And I was sitting there. And at that moment, we found out we were going to have a child and we were excited, but it was like, I don't know what to do. In that moment of stress, one of the things that popped in my head was, while I'm waiting and while I'm applying, I'm just going to write. Like, I'm going to write. I have an idea about a comic book and this thing. Instead of being stressed and angry and frustrated with where things are, I'm just going to write. That's what I can do right now, is write. And I also told myself that before my child is born, I want them to see me do things that I'm interested in, so that they know that it doesn't matter where you are in life, you can still do things. The kid didn't come in and ruin your life. You just have to find ways to make things work with your family. Right now, I would say it's been a learning process. You know, like at the beginning part of this, I was all in trying to do everything, but now I'm learning how to balance things. And I find that I love watching my children and watch how creativity comes to them so naturally. And for me, as I'm getting older, it's like I feel like I'm pulling at things. But as I speak to them, they have like ideas, and I'm like, why did you do it that way? That is interesting. Let me like, and it gives me ideas. It inspires me. It's making me want to do different things. I made like children's books because of our experiences going to libraries, and I look at them and I see what they're looking for, but they can't find it. So I'm like, oh, I should probably write it. So it's just been those experiences that has really inspired me to just kind of come up with things. And, you know, my wife and I, you know, it's been like, been tough, like especially at the beginning part, because we were like trying to figure out how to make all of this work. And it's with time, you know, I've learned to like prioritize what's important, and family is first, and then art is second, but it's not second as not important, but it's second as, if my family is not happy, they're the reason why I do all of this. If I ruin this part here, all this stuff that I'm working hard for them to enjoy will not mean much, because, you know, that's the reason why I do it. I do it because of them. So I need to keep them happy so that I can be happy while I'm doing what I'm doing.
That's awesome. I love it. And the fact that you're including your family in your creativity, and the fact that they have their own style and their own creativity as well, like, that's a wonderful experience, because it's these memories that they're going to hang on to as they grow older. And they'll remember, you know, I had fun helping give my dad an idea to write a book, or, you know, he did this for me when nothing was available, and I'm glad at him for doing this, et cetera. Do you have any daily habits or mindset shifts that are instrumental in driving your personal and professional growth, though?
Mm-hmm. Yes. A couple of strategies that I employ is, number one, I do have a plan. Even though I mentioned earlier that I move at my pace, is a pace with a plan. I have all of the stories, all the projects that I want to do, all documented, the process, how I want to have them out in the world. I have documents that display the kinds of books I want to do, the printers that I want to use. I have a plan of where I want to go, so that I'm never caught off guard, like when opportunities appear. One of the reasons why, as a publisher, I don't just do comics is because when I go to conventions, I notice that people enjoy prose books, but not necessarily comics. Or I've noticed that my number one customer are women. And because they purchase things, they're the customer that purchased for their kids and their significant others, versus like men, when they come in shop, is either for themselves or maybe their child that they really know that one thing they really like. But I've noticed that in knowing that about my customer base, I know how to market better to the customer by explaining things or sharing things, or knowing that if the customer doesn't know anything about comics, you know, I can sit there and have a conversation and share the process. Or if a customer, you know, love comics, I have knowledge as to how to bring them in. Other things that I employ for as mindset shifts is not just having a plan, is also writing. I also have a regimen of writing, and having writing time where I constantly create new stories and write and refine stories. I always have 2 to 3 stories in rotation throughout the year in various states. So that, you know, when one is done and that is done, I have another book ready to move forward. Sometimes I have 4 already done. I work already written by me, but not done with an artist. So I have it written, but, you know, I have a process, you know, of, so that there isn't a financial roadblock or issue. I only work one project at a time and ensure that artists are paid their full thing, paid for the project, and then I move on to go print and do other things, because it's important for me that relationship work, and then afterwards go to financing and making the book and getting things moving forward. So having a plan and planning financially how to fund these projects, I have that in my planning.
some people just write for the sake of writing. Some people don't actually have a plan when they go ahead, where they have an idea, but they don't have a plan of how to actuate it and how to get it out there. I think that comes into the fact of promotion and marketing and social media connections throughout the years and decades that you've been on the various platforms. Looking at these connections that you've built up over the years and that you go back to, like our connection, for instance, it's just, I saw you had a new venture. I saw the fact that we hadn't talked in forever, and I was like, I'm going to take that initial step. I'm going to reach out to Jacques, and I'm going to say, what the heck have you been up to? Why haven't we connected in for so long? And, you know, like, how the heck are you? So,
and I appreciate it, too. It was great to see that message. I'm like, yeah, so we haven't talked in a while. Yeah.
But looking at these connections you've built up over the years, though, how are you trying to promote Not So Super Publishing? Because there's been a lot of issues with publishers more recently in regards to either not paying people, and you've already said that you pay your artists. How are you trying to set yourself apart as a publisher compared to, say, others that are like already established?
It goes back to what I said earlier about interaction with individuals and who you work with. One of the things that has been very important to me, because I've been a freelance graphic designer and I've been on that other end where people don't understand that creativity don't just appear. And also life happens, you know, a lot of moments in life, a lot of things happen to people. My patience is probably higher than most people. So for me, I want people to be well when they work on projects with me. I try to create an environment where people know that there's understanding on my end. I have a deadline on my head, but I never publicize a deadline. And the artists that I pick, there's always been a pre-vetting process in terms of I've either send a piece of art so that I see how they work, or I follow them for a long enough time to just kind of have an idea of how they work and how they comport themselves online. And that enables me to directly create a relationship with the people that I work with. I also have an editor that I've been working with. Her name is Beverly Bamberry, and she's been very good at helping me with, like, I'm a good writer, but I was born in a country in Cameroon, Africa, and I spoke French for the first 11 years of my life. I have those moments where my English, there's certain pieces of things that I know they sound, because I say it as I remember it as a bilingual person. And sometimes there's moments where I need somebody to jump in and be like, okay, what do you mean by this? Or also this cultural parts of it. Like I was in Africa, in Cameroon, that's where I was born. And storytelling methods are very different. And there are certain things and certain ways of storytelling that are very different. And I am the end all be all in how the story would end up going, because I notice instances where there's certain things that are cultural and I want to keep it because of such. But there's other things where it's confusing because the language is starting to shift and things are starting to be weird. And she's been very good at helping me identify those things and help me like clear some things. Been very, very interesting. These collaborations and these relationships has enabled us to grow together. I always promote. I'm not like stingy with my property to the point, you know, that nobody is. I think I want it to grow. And if it becomes a success that beyond all of our wildest dreams, I want to bring everyone along with me. I don't want this to be a lonely thing where, you know, I sit at the top of the molehill alone. You know, I want the team to be there with me.
What is the storytelling like from being born and raised in Cameroon to the North American storytelling style? Like, I'd love to know the differences and similarities between those two.
Because culturally, it's an oral tradition, a lot of the storytelling is more, it's people-driven, but it can sometimes be in mode of hearsay storytelling, types of ways of telling stories. And as a kid, I was always like really engaged by listening to stories by different people. My method of storytelling is merged with two different things. My father is from Cameroon, Africa. My mom is from Charlotte, North Carolina, here in the U.S. My grandmother here in the U.S., my mom's mother, she was also a storyteller, but from a Black American perspective, I was hearing her stories and how she told things. And I also have the line to Africa and Cameroon, my grandfather. And it's just, I see the unity because of history, but I also see the complete difference. and also being in America and the American culture and African American culture and the African culture. It's like there's so many different ways of storytelling. And I think that's one of the unique things that I'm thankful for, is that I have that unique perspective that enables me to tell a story in a way that I think not many people do, because that's a lot of different lenses, you know, that I have. Because even being in Africa, I was in the French speaking part of Africa. So a lot of French, like Tintin and Asterix and Obelix. And I grew up with French stuff, Pif and all this stuff. I grew up with French things. So it's like I have a whole lot of different sources to pull from for storytelling.
The only problem with being a Canadian is we have the bastardized Quebec French. So there's only so much we can do with that. All I know is the swearing of the Tabernacle, et cetera, you know, from that side of things. But that's the limit of my French knowledge. What is an early experience where you learned that language had power?
Give me a second to think about that. That's a deep one. Language has power. I would say the very first moment I realized it was a very important moment in my life, and is something, conversations I had with my mother when I was a small child. When I was a little kid, I used to like to tell stories, but not in a good way. So like lie a lot as a kid. But for me, you know, now that I'm older and I can look back and I have children of my own, I can acknowledge that the reason why was because I liked the feeling of telling a story more than I like lying. So I like to say things because I liked how it looks. But my mom sat with me and she was like, you gotta understand, you know, when you're lying, when you say things, it's hard for people to believe what you're saying. You know, you might want to channel that in another way, you know, like you could tell stories, but in a different way, but not lie. And I think that formative moment, like as a child, kind of switched something in my head of the realization that my words mean something and they can do something. They can either make someone trust me or not trust me, you know, and at a very young age, it really informed like how I interact, what I write, how I say things, because words do have the power to uplift someone, or if someone is down, push them even lower. You know, the words that you have are powerful. And as a writer, it's very important to me. And that's the thing, I take that responsibility very seriously, because I've been on the other end of being low at my lowest. And, you know, in this world of social media, when the words are very negative and consistently negative, it pushes you in an even lower state. That's made me, as a creative and a creator of books, and even in my social media life, more aware about what I say and the impact of what I say. I really am aware of it, and I don't mean to offend. I don't want to hurt. I want to build bridges. I want people to learn from me versus feeling down, you know? But I also like to use my words to inform and tell the truth. I also am not like a kumbaya. People may believe that about me sometimes, because I try to be positive, but there's moments where I have to be very honest about where things are, and I don't have a problem saying that. So being truthful and being hurtful are two very different things, and your words do have power. And as a writer, I take that responsibility seriously of writing things that uplift people. And that's what I've chosen to do, what I have skills to do. Other people have great ways to agitate you just the right way. That's not the skill that I have. So I'm not going to try to go into a lane that I'm not good at, but I know everyone has their skill. And my skill, I think personally, is finding ways to unite and uplift versus agitate. You know, that's not my strength. Nice. But I appreciate those who are good at it.
Everyone usually asks, what's the wisest piece of advice, or what's the most BS piece of advice that you've ever received? But what is the second wisest piece of advice that you've received that has stuck with you in your career?
Okay, let me pause for a second and think about that. I would say it's one that I mentioned earlier. A piece of advice, I heard someone say this many years ago, and I cannot, I probably don't remember the name, but I heard it many years ago. If you're not happy doing what you're creating, it shows in your work. And I mentioned that earlier. And it's important to enjoy the body of work that you create. Is important to not pigeonhole yourself into being something that you think others want you to be. Anything. And having done this for over a decade, I've realized that things come in cycles. So you can never time the perfect time to make this thing for this time of the year. It's better to just make the thing that you like and time will catch up with it. I've made some things like 5 years ago that, you know, at the time had no popularity, but because history has changed and things have happened, this piece is prescient and it works now. If I did things because it's popular and I didn't really enjoy it, it would have been pointless. It would have been a waste of time. You know, I'd rather do things that I enjoy and write stories that I enjoy and move at the pace that is fair to me and have it out there when is the right time for it to be out there. But I'd rather have something done than have something, you know, that I wish I created, you know, oh, I should have done that because now would have been the perfect time, but I didn't do it. So who cares? So just making the things that don't pigeonhole yourself, make what you want to make and learn from it. If you mess up from it, learn from it. Just learn from that mess up, you know.
And either don't do it again or do it again.
Exactly. Like
everyone has one person that inspired them on their path to where they are today. Who was that for you?
For me to be on this path, the person who inspired me more than anything was my grandmother. As a kid, I remember as a child, I used to like to draw comic books and do these little things. And I always felt odd and felt alone because I felt like nobody else really liked what I liked. I had supportive family, and it's not like I won't make it sound like, you know, people just didn't care, but it was just an interest that was very unique and not a lot of people liked it the way I did. And I was okay with that. But my grandmother was the only person who, like, whenever I made things, she had like this area, she had a deep freezer and a wall where she put all of my artwork. And as I walked by, and she said, you're going to write a book one day. You're going to do this one day. And she just kept saying these things. And I'm a little kid. I'm like, okay, you know, thanks, Grandma. And it pumped me up in a way that I didn't realize as a kid, but it put something in me to always think that I could do something, even though, you know, I'm not, at that time, I didn't even have an inkling about publishing. And it was way later in my life, you know, where I decided to pursue it. But every time I think of her in that moment and her encouragement and her, this thing she didn't understand, how much inspiration and how much encouragement she gave me, I'll never forget it. And, you know, she passed away many years ago, but it's a memory that just sticks with me all the time.
From a professional standpoint, you're, of course, a graphic designer, a comic creator, a publisher now, and you are working on so many amazing projects that I'm sure you're going to be back here sooner than later, not every 10 years. So professionally, you're successful in that regard. Do you consider yourself personally successful?
Yes, I do. I felt successful the first book I published. After that moment, everything else has been icing on the cake because I didn't know I could make a book 12 years ago. I just jumped out there. You know, I went to the library and got scripts on how to make books, how to make comics the Stan Lee way, which just a segue back to your question. I remember getting the Marvel way, the Marvel method. I got the books to learn how to write scripts because I had no idea how to do this thing. And I just tried. And over the years, it's evolved to new processes. But when that first book came out and it was actually Super, which is not so super, was actually the name of the first book, you know, the first comic, that was the moment I felt successful because I didn't think it was possible. I didn't know what I was doing. I just moved along and then it happened. And then afterwards I had a Kickstarter and people actually bought the book. And it was just like, it blew my mind because I didn't know that would be possible. And then after that happened, I was like, yeah, you know, this is something I want to do. And for me, any book that every time a book comes out, I feel successful because I'm checking something off that I've always wanted to do and see it realized.
The reverse of success is failure. How do you deal with your failures?
I beat myself up. No, I'm just kidding. With my failures, I'm okay with criticism and I'm okay with failing. I don't feel comfortable when I don't fail. I honestly, because failure is the place where I learn. I feel like when I don't fail, I always feel like this is too easy. This is too easy. There's something I'm missing because this is too easy. For me, failure has always been the point where I learn something new that moves me another level. If everything is smooth, that means I'm not, in my internal mind is always thinking I'm not doing something right, because there needs to be a struggle there so that I know I'm making that burp. I'm going to the next level. Failure for me has always been, it is a measure for me of an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to figure out how to restructure and redo things. I want to say this right now because I know the era that we live in. I know a lot of creatives are afraid, especially to fail publicly, because they're afraid that other people may jump in, and because of something that we can't foresee what our impact our work would have on others. And we are not aware of our blind spots as we create our work. And sometimes as we put our works out there, we might have a blind spot and then somebody might catch it. And then all of a sudden you're at a point where it's a failure that is scary. I always advise people to not to lean into those failures, to admit that failure, to learn from it, and even speak to the people who have told you that there's a problem, because that's a moment for you to learn and go to that next level and make something meaningful and grow from it publicly, which is something is starting to fade away, growing publicly. It's something that people are afraid of growing and afraid of being wrong, when really being wrong is the beginning steps for you to learn and grow and do something new and grow. That's my thoughts on that, on failure.
The younger generation is looking at your work and they're becoming inspired to be creative in their own way, whether it's as a writer or a publisher. And the fact that you have the younger generation with you, with your kids, who are also creative in their own way, maybe you're going to keep inspiring them down their creative path. How can they inspire the generation that follows them?
One of the biggest things we keep telling our children is to speak the truth, which is one of the things that is always strong for us, because of the world that's moving forward is becoming harder and harder to know what reality is and what is true. And it's important as creatives to find ways to impart some kind of truth somehow in the world. And my constant thing for my children, especially I have young Black girls in the United States of America, I want them to create things that show them. Like, I don't want them to write my stories. I want them to write their stories. I want their stories to resonate to people their age and how they feel. I don't want them to write what I write. I want them to write, like, my youngest, who's 8, writes poetry right now, and she's 8, and the things that she writes, you know, it's truth to her right now, but I can already see where she's going, and I can see where my oldest is going with the characters she's creating and the things that she likes and the stories she writes. And the things that she do is nothing to do with what I'm doing, but I just want them to represent themselves in the work that they create, because other little kids who are like them, or who, when they become adults, who are like them, will love to see those things in their lives. And I want them to continuously remember to include themselves in their own work. Because in the United States, it's very easy to want to homogenize and create a story exactly one way. And it's like, no, you know, write you. It'd be okay with making characters that look like you and stories that include you, because that's the best story you can tell, because it's your experience. You can tell your experience better than anybody else. So write that, you know, and share that with the world. That's what I want the next generation to do, is to write the truths about themselves and share their experiences and allow other people in to see how they see the world.
If your life was a comic book, what would its title be? And what would its soundtrack be?
What would its title be? Oh, if my life was a comic book, I wish you told me this earlier. I would have had something like fancy ready. If it was a comic book, it would be I was going to say not so super, but that was that when I wrote not so super, that's how my life was. But now I think the story, if I created a story in a comic book, it would probably be called something like Peanuts, a Snoopy kind of comic, and it'll be kind of like a dad's life, because that is more of a part, that's more realistic to where things are in my life and being a father. And I think that is the most, there's so many things that I've seen and that I think are very funny and interesting that I think in the comic book, it will make people laugh. The soundtrack to my life really is, right now it would be, it will be Green Noise, which is the sound in the background. They kind of sound like ocean sounds, because that's how my life is. It's just like, as I work, that's the zone I'm in, is the green sound playing in the background. So that's the sound effect to match with the inability to picture things. So.
You know, Jacques, this has been a wonderful conversation. I hate to say this, but that ends this particular episode of Two Geeks Talk. I want to thank you so much for finally coming back on the show after so long.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was definitely a pleasure, and I'll do it again.
and I'll have you back on again anytime, for sure. For those that want to support Not So Super Publishing and yourself as a creative person, where can we find you? How can we support you? And any websites or social media links you'd like to promote?
My website is, as you can see, is notsosuper.pub, notsosuper.pub. There you will see my social media will be at the bottom. At the top, there'll be the first banner will be one that showcase the Super Sustainer program that I mentioned earlier. If you would like to support and help Not So Super grow, that's an opportunity to do that there. Everything can be found on notsosuper.pub. And if you're ever in any social media, just look for Not So Super Pub, and that's where I will be.
Like I said, that ends this particular episode of Two Geeks Talk. You can, of course, find this interview and 1,200 plus others. I've lost count, but I'll get the official count one of these days. On our website, twogeekstalking.com, that's T-W-O, or tgtmedia.com. The website's going through a revamp and a rebuild, so go to our YouTube channel. That is always updated. It is youtube.com/TGT Media. The podcast is back after 12 or so years. You can find that at twogeekstalking.podbean.com, or just search Two Geeks Talking wherever you get your podcasts. And as I say every week, everyone has a story to tell. It's up to me to help bring that out. Thanks for listening and watching on Two Geeks Talking.